morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. The monthly supper club is the creation of Gallery Bar and Bistro executive chef Bill Glover. The supper club is held on the second Tuesday of the month. This month it lands on August 14th. Next week's supper club is a collaboration among Glover, Marcus Meacham of Craft House 5, and Seth Lasik, the executive chef at Wolf's Ridge Brewing. Bill and Seth are both joining us this morning, along with WOSU food reviewer Rich Terapak, on All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. First of all, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill, what is the monthly supper club?
When I had Sage, we did a lot of the monthly wine dinner format, and I felt like it was a really great opportunity to, as a kitchen team, be able to do something that's outside of the regular menu that we have, which gave the cooks an opportunity to be creative and us as a team to create opportunities for our guests to try new things. Also, with this new program we have at Gallery, is what I wanted to do is do more collaborations. This month, wanted to do a beer pairing. I wanted to step outside of the traditional format of a wine dinner and do something more creative and try to develop an approach that was fresh. And I've always wanted to try to bring other chefs in. We have the facility at Gallery at the Hilton that is spacious. It's a luxury that few of us have, and felt like it was the perfect venue to really be able to bring in other local chefs, establish a connection within the community to really work within our strengths and the resources that we all have and pull them together in one venue.
And do you have pretty much carte blanche at the Hilton if you want to start this kind of innovative program?
Yeah, it's a very unique situation within the Hilton corporate structure. The Gallery was something that came up as a, there are no other Hiltons in the country really that have a chef in place that has the freedom that I am fortunate to have. Within the lunch and dinner format, I have the ability to approach the menu with my style, my ideas. It's a beta test in a sense within the national corporate structure of what we're doing. Something I take very seriously and hopefully allow the success of with what we're doing, allow the other opportunities for chefs in the company to do the same thing.
Hmm. Seth, is this the first time that you've been involved in the supper club?
Yes. I believe this is the first supper club that is going to be launched. Bill has been so kind to invite me over and do this collaboration with Marcus and him. And we're pretty excited about it at Wolf's Ridge. And, Ohio's craft brewing in Columbus has just blown up over the
so
last
so much that there's
years.
A hop shortage.
Hop shortage, <yeah. laughs> skipping a hop.
But the first one, it's just it's great to launch it off with the local chefs and the local beers since it's been such a big scene. And we're really excited about it.
So are you bringing beer to the party or are you bringing something else?
The courses that I'll be doing will be paired with Wolf's Ridge Brewing. We're planning on bringing Luck Strikes Twice, which is our West Coast IPA. That'll be paired with a Scallop Crudo. And we're bringing a Shadow Porter. And that's going to be paired with our the Duck and the Goose is that course.
I can barely keep up with all of this. I went to the Kroger's and Brewery District, and you can get six for $9.99 or something like that. Took our younger son Brad, and it took him a half an hour to pick stuff out. We were focusing on IPAs too. The beer garden, do you have that open yet? I know you were working on that.
The tap room we have in the back warehouse is going. It's still in construction.
A neat big facility, it looks like.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be great. It'll be fun. We'll have huge beer garden tables and a bar back there. And it allows us to have a space for special events as well.
Yeah, terrific.
Now, you mentioned that you were doing certain courses. Is that the way you've broken this up, that Marcus will do certain courses, you'll do certain courses, Bill?
Yeah,
as
exactly.
Well as
that way we all have an equal share in the collaboration. We're all doing two courses, and then my pastry team is doing the final dessert. So it's a 7-course format in all cases throughout the month. throughout the months as they go down the road. This month is the beer. Next month we're doing a harvest dinner, like a September. In October, I'm going to do another collaborative with some local chefs. I've David Tetzloff over at G. Michael's.
Sure.
He did one with me when we opened in March of 13. So I think I'm going to get him back involved and look to ask a few others. Josh Dalton from Veritas with Silas, they're going to come on down. Those are, like, again, it just comes down to just using our fabulous venue at the gallery and allowing it to be a stage for us to work together.
That's terrific. It isn't altruism altogether, I think. It's just great, too, to have the community be recognized for great restaurants.
Exactly.
And we're getting a lot more of that. And hopefully the Democrats saw that yesterday or the day before. Did they come to the hotel, by the way?
Yeah, they did. We hosted some of the scouts, if you will, for that. Us and the Hyatt teamed up and spent the day really trying to showcase our wonderful city and in the hopes of landing the DNC.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have.
Absolutely.
The James Beard Foundation dinner, I missed that last year. I don't want to miss it again this year.
Yeah, this year is building into a very amazing list of chefs that are signing up. Jonathan Sawyer and I last year hosted the dinner in December. This year it's going to be December 11th. We've gotten a few commitments, a few that are on the way. I've got a meeting early next week with somebody that I'm really hopeful that'll get involved. His name's Curtis Duffy out of Chicago, Grace Restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Sawyer's committed. Kevin Sousa from Pittsburgh, Salt of the Earth, is committed. It's the last installment of this 2014 Supper Club season. We're building towards that again, another collaboration. It's a regional Midwestern list of chefs,
mm-hmm,
that are, you know, either James Beard nominees, it's a list of talent that is rare to find in one evening.
Is Duffy the person that's being honored at Taste of the Future at Columbus State?
I think so.
Yeah.
His name is on the lineup.
Yeah. He's a Columbus State grad. He and I actually met back in 97 when I was there and he was there.
Mm-hmm.
He graduated a year ahead in the class, a year ahead, but he's been in Chicago and
doing well.
I've eaten there. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Grace is the name of the restaurant.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
We're talking with Bill Glover of Gallery Bar and Bistro in the Hilton downtown, along with Seth Lasik.
Lasik.
Somebody mentioned the word LASIK to
me. It was me. I'm sorry.
The air,
no, I'm sorry.
And
no.
Now, of course, it's stuck. Well, perhaps we've just had to rename you for the day. We're talking about the monthly supper club at the Hilton at the Gallery Bistro and Bar. It sounds so romantic. It sounds so retro, the supper club. It sounds as though Frank Sinatra is going to come out and croon and everybody's going to be, you know, just bedazzled by the evening. Is there entertainment?
No, we don't have a specific jazz band or something of that. I think that I'd like to consider what we're putting out as the entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
The community table setting, it gives people a chance to meet and discuss and talk, and it kind of furthers that idea of being part of the community of chefs. It's also you're sitting with a group of your local peers, and that can in itself kind of give its talking points through the food.
Well, let's talk about the nuts and bolts a little bit.
Sure.
It is a collaboration. Do you meet ahead of time, obviously, and you decide the menu? But how do you really hash it out so that you're not either stepping on each other's toes or clashing in terms of the palate?
We've shared quite a few emails over the last few weeks, and it comes down to Seth and I met and we sat down and talked about like top line ingredient, like pork, lamb, like just very broad spectrum ingredients. So then when we start to write our menus, we look at components to make sure we're not being redundant, and then we kind of decide on a course order collectively and approach the menu as we would if we were singular in writing it, so it's cohesive and it makes sense from top to bottom. So
we just kind of pick your protein and go from there.
Yeah, we just kind of threw out ideas. And
it allows us to get really creative, too, because we might create a couple ideas and then throw it back and forth, and then it could create another dish, and then we finally agree upon something, and then it's a whole cohesive menu, and like we're not overlapping ingredients, and
so you kind of bounce things off of each other.
Yeah.
Are there foods that particularly pair well with beer?
There are.
Well, name a few.
It's not just a German or Belgian menu either, is it?
Well, the beer scene's been growing, and the styles have been growing as well. Yeah. There's always, every new year, I see a different style.
It's
a cross between a red ale and an IPA and a stout. Now there's black IPAs, which is a hoppy stout beer. But with the food, it's just like wine. I mean, there's all sorts of different styles of beer, and it can go with all sorts of different foods.
Well, the summer menu fare typically is lighter than what you're going to eat in the winter. So do you pair up the beers to match that same kind of...
Yeah, lagers instead.
Right, the lighter fare in the spring and summer, and then a crisper beer in those seasons, like an IPA or a wheat beer, mm-hmm. or like a Belgian wit would be a good one. Really effervescent and light, but it still has a tremendous amount of flavor and alcohol in it.
You amazed at how many microbreweries there are in the state of Ohio these days. I mean, it's well over 60, I think.
Yeah, it's like a really forgiving state that makes it less difficult to get things started. So, of course, you're going to have a lot more interest there. I was in New York this winter and talked to some folks locally that asked about that question and said that how difficult it was there because of the legal implications that go along with creating that idea, where here it's a little less red tape, I guess, to get the ball rolling.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, and we benefit.
Yeah.
So the next Supper Club is next week.
Yeah, it's the second Thursday of every month throughout the year. So this coming Thursday on the 14th is the beer pairing with, as you said, Seth and Marcus. We also have North High Brewing involved, and Seven Sun Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. They're going to have beers involved with the event, Colin Vent and Gavin Meyer from those places respectively. Next month is going to be somewhat of an all-Ohio ingredient. I'm going to do that myself with my chef team and just really try to focus on the farms and the sources of the products.
Kind of a harvest kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then in October, we're doing the local chef collaborative. November, we're going to do a smaller, more intimate in the kitchen. We're going to do like a chef's table in the kitchen for only about 20. And then in December, we cap the year off with the James Beard Celebrity Chef Tour dinner.
Well, can you give us a couple of highlights from next week's menu?
Seth, you're starting off with the scallop crudo.
Yeah, the first course is the scallop crudo paired with the Luck Strikes Twice West Coast IPA. And it's a cold application served raw, and with Thai chilies, some nice Corto olive oil, fresh grapefruit, and egg yolk Bataga. Bataga is traditionally salt cured fish roe, but we took the idea and salt cured egg yolks. So it's a play on the Bataga, and it adds that a little bit of umami, but the salt component too from the salt cured egg yolks and the. It adds a little extra fat.
Complex.
Since the scallop's such a lean muscle. Yeah.
I'm doing a tuna course with flavors of like miso and pickled beach mushroom and some really good flavors that work well with beer. My chef de cuisine in the restaurant, Josh Kaser, is doing a frog leg, which is like beer food if there was one, and followed by a pretzel dessert that makes sense with beer as well.
Well, you think about Asian foods, being, you know, Japanese and Thai, etc. Beers, it works.
I want to thank all of you very much. The monthly supper club at the Galleria Bar and Bistro is located at the Hilton downtown. Bill Glover is the executive chef at Gallery. Seth Lasik, finally got it right, is the executive chef at Wolf's Ridge Brewery downtown. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you very
this
much.
Morning.
Thanks
Appreciate
for having
it.
Us.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. We are talking with WOSU restaurant reviewers Rich Terapak, his son Rich, along with Marion Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground. And thanks to you all for joining us this morning. We touched on the topic of special event dining before, but how important are events like the Supper Club, like Dine Originals, Wednesday Originals, the Historical Dinner Club? We've got a slew of kind of specialty
dining
events.
The 10 for 10 at the refectory that Kamal does.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Ricky Lopez is doing another one on the same date on the 14th, which is, I think, next Thursday, doing a Sicilian dinner, and he's going to do those periodically. Again, paired with like seven wines. So I think it's fun. It gives us a lot of different options.
I think it's great for the kind of professional dining class, those folks who eat out every night and probably get a little bored with, you know.
The professional dining class.
Yeah, but they're, and I do not include myself in that. I cook at home almost every night.
Remember, they have a one-year-old.
So. Yeah, but I just mean there are people who, you know, go out to eat pretty much every night. And I think for them, it's kind of exciting to go to these events that change things up a bit. I know that I don't know if you guys talked to. I missed the first 20 minutes. Pardon me, but I know that celebrity chef tour that Bill does as well over at Gallery, where he brings in, you know, chefs from Dayton, Cleveland, you know, all over Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Did you mention that?
Yeah.
I think that's a real neat thing. I've always kind of meant to get to, but have not yet. But I think, you know, it's exciting. Anything to, you know, change it up and keep things interesting.
It kind of makes for destination dining.
Indeed.
Wait for a special event like that.
Absolutely.
And special events have been around for a long time in the dining scene. I think they're just hotter now than they used to be. I know Le Chatelain has had, you know, when it has a new wine come out, it has a wine dinner. And other places, you know, will have dinners often focused around wine.
I know,
it's just, this is the new way to do it. Everyone's doing it, and it's getting a lot more press.
And I think it works better than the food weeks that we had for a while. You know, where
they're exhausting.
Yeah, they're exhausting.
It's too much to keep up on.
Yeah. And I think chefs have a hard time with them because they have to turn their menus in months in advance. They don't always know what's going to be available. They're fairly labor intensive for the staff and everyone else. So spreading out, as Dine Originals has done now, one Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the week, makes it a little bit easier. It's just one night.
I think it's certainly more manageable and a great way to keep track of these things. Many of these restaurants, you know, have email lists, or, you know, most all of them have a Facebook page. I know, for instance, Paul Yao at Hey Paul's downtown does, you know, different wine dinners and, you know, things like that about once every couple of weeks. I get an email about those. So yeah, if you get on their mailing list, it's a great way to keep track of these things and kind of, you know, it's, I know my wife and I always have a tough time deciding where to eat out, you know, when we do rarely get to. And
when the grandparents finally agree to
babysit. When the grandparents are actually in for the night and take the kids. And those emails and things like that we see on Facebook are often what give us the inspiration to go particular places. For instance, The Kitchen last Tuesday night, which is not a restaurant per se, but is, you know, more of a banquet hall, so to speak. They host events, but they do Taco Tuesdays. And, you know, we saw that on Facebook and we're like, yeah, let's go check that out. And it was a really great, affordable way to eat, a beautiful space. If you haven't been there, it's in the old video store on Livingston in German Village. I can't remember the cross street, but right near the 70 interchange right there.
And this is called The Kitchen.
The Kitchen. And it's a kind of a collective. They have people, at least for Taco Tuesday night, the only night I've been there, where they come in and prepare food in the kitchen. They set up kind of a side bar where they have a couple things on draft, a couple specialty drinks they do. And they have different, they do the Taco Tuesday every Tuesday night, and they change up the menu every time. So it makes for really an interesting experience.
Yeah, it was an interesting experiment. Ann and Jen are the two owners, and I think they got funded by Kickstarter.
That's right.
And it works. It's terrific. And they don't have to make potato salad either.
Whenever anyone mentions The Kitchen, I have to think to myself, okay, The Kitchen, the table,
the plate.
Kitchen. Right. Oh, do we have a plate
the
now?
Plate.
I don't know where the plate is.
I think it's just plate.
Oh, plate. So the table's in the Short North. And when I wrote my review of The Table, I started out the first three paragraphs talking about The Table. And then the last four or five paragraphs somehow I switched.
Morphed?
I started talking about the kitchen. And my editor, I mean, it was by the grace of God and a good editor that I didn't make a fool out of myself publicly. Because I get, for whatever reason, those two words seem really similar to me. So whenever someone mentions the kitchen, I think to myself, which one is that?
Well, I think people who write for a living tend to do that. I know I've written stories where I'll change someone's name in the middle of the story and it'll go from Hoffman the Hubbard or something. Just, you know, fortunately, thank goodness for editors.
Yeah, misery loves company. Thank you for saying that.
292-8513 if you'd like to join the conversation this morning. We're talking with Rich Terapak, his son Rich, who both write for our WOSU Chefs in the City blog, along with Marion Bowers Abbott of the Underground, Columbus Underground. Tess is joining us this morning. Go ahead, Tess.
Hi. I have a home in France, and I became the first Geek With host in Ohio. There was an article on me in Columbus Alive last month, and there's going to be one in Westerville Magazine next month. But what Geek With is it was started by Guy Michelin of the Michelin family, and Israel. He had gone to Crete and realized that the best meal he'd had there was in a private home. So he started Geek With. And in order to be an Eat With host, and I wish more people would become hosts, is the reason I'm calling also to talk about what I do, but mostly I think more people should do it. I'm the only one in all of Ohio. To become an Eat With host, you have to have something unique about your offering. So, for instance, I have a home in France, and my offering is focused on what do French people eat at home, like for Sunday dinner, for family dinner. And I also...
Jacques Pépin's roasted chicken.
They ate a lot of chicken, but I also really try to eat seasonally and locally. So, for instance, I'm just finishing up summer. I was doing a Provençal dinner, and starting when I get back from France next month, I'm leaving on Wednesday, I'm going to do a Normandy dinner, which is, of course, a really great tie-in to Ohio with the apples and the Rambo or the Rimbaud apples.
Calvados.
The Calvados, only I'm using Ohio Applejack from the Tomfoolery Distillery in Cleveland. They actually went to Normandy and went to many Calvados distilleries before starting Tomfoolery.
How would someone get involved in this organization? You're the only one in Ohio.
I am the only one in Ohio, and I met with Guy, the owner. They now just opened their office in the U.S. in San Francisco, and I was there a few weeks later and talked to him. You have to go through an application process, so you go there and you become a host. Now, they insure me, so you have to... I had to Skype with them, several times. They had to see my home, meet me, make sure I was personable, get references. And then you have to also submit an offering. And after all of that, they still said, finally said, okay, you can do it. But we really don't think very many people will come because it's primarily very successful in urban areas. There are a lot of...
And we're not an urban area. But...
Yeah, there are a lot... Well, they don't... They live in New York and Tel Aviv, so they don't have any idea. Right. And Columbus, but they do get, the people who do get tourists do some of them make a lot of money doing it. A lot of chefs do it, but it's very affordable. Like my dinners are $25 to $30, including the wine. Now you're not going to get like Laurent Cru, but you're going to get a reasonable wine that is well paired.
Okay, Tess, thank you so much for your call. We do have other people on the line. Thanks. That's an interesting idea and one that I hadn't really heard much about.
Either.
Well, no. Of course, she's the one and only in Ohio. some restaurants for a while were doing that with private email lists, having just a certain grouping of people in. But
I heard about it happening out in Seattle, actually, and it was kind of themed around the fact that there are certain foods that were banned for some reason or another, and chefs would actually who would want to cook with their foie gras in Chicago or whatever, and chefs who wanted to cook with those would set up shop similar to this concept in people's homes.
Covert cooking.
Yeah, and literally they're illegal.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was surprised the health department didn't have to have all kinds of fussing with that kind
now.
Of process.
Maybe she does.
That's a neat concept. I think it's great.
292-8513. We're talking about Columbus restaurants and food this morning with our panel of reviewers, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Marion Bowers Abbott. Steve is joining us from Clintonville. Good morning, Steve.
Hi. Rich, have you gone to the Angry Bear? It's the restaurant that replaced Sage. extra hound dog pizza?
Yeah, no, I have not. My buddy Steve Stover's been there and just raved about it. I'm anxious
to. I would
say
you're in for a treat.
That's what I've heard. They're doing some. You know, it's amazing. Clintonville is kind of just jumping up with all sorts of things. The Crest, this, you know, the New Harvest pizza. Yeah, I'm anxious to go. And these two folks came out of whose kitchen? Three folks.
Was that a Latitude 41 and a couple Bossy, I believe.
Yeah. Two of them were at Bossy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard wonderful things as well. I'm actually trying to go there this weekend if we can get away.
We went for brunch one Sunday. It was a really fun brunch.
I've heard nothing but good things.
And, and you can bring your kids for like a brunch. It wouldn't be horrible.
And it's a great, you know, it's a great site. And I think Chef Glover was, you know, reluctant to shut it down. He was busy downtown, but I'm glad someone stepped in and with this much talent. And so we've been talking about it, that cooking classes and stuff, and hopefully they get a good start.
Well, they have gotten terrific
that
reviews.
It expands your taste palette, kind of like a color palette, but very, very interesting things that they've paired together.
Mm-hmm. I've looked at the menu. It's very creative, and it looks terrific. It's on one of my tops on my list of places to go.
Yeah, one of the other things that was, I guess, born in Clintonville and has moved a little bit south is the market at Italian Village has opened at 3rd and Summit,
which is getting a lot of buzz. It's
all
over.
And just go and try the charcuterie, which is called Duet. It's a very complex and interesting pairing of various salamis and meats, cheeses with you know, aspic and all kinds of, you know, quince jelly. It's $15 and some great items you can purchase there as well.
Well, now that you've brought that up, why don't we talk a little bit about the market? It's kind of a unique concept. It's grocery store, deli, restaurant, all combined into one. And I think it's at 3rd Street and 3rd Avenue, isn't
it? Yeah, Summit is 3rd Street and 3rd Avenue. It's in the kind of the northern part of Italian Village. It holds probably 60 people with the outside seating in a bistro setting. There are grocery items, many of them picked up at the fancy food markets in New York and San Francisco. So you'll get some exotic Modena olive oil. I won't talk about price points. They do have Iberico ham, which is very unusual to find here in town.
Is that the Spanish ham?
Yeah, the hogs that are raised only on acorns. And a great cheese selection. But you know, their menu is really pretty approachable, but also very unique. They got a grilled peach and prosciutto salad. I've got the menu in front of me. The cured green tomato with microgreens is a vegan's delight because there's nothing on it. They were going to put honey on it, but they thought that wasn't going to work because it wasn't absolutely vegetarian. The pizzas, they've got a duck brie and fig pizza that's just terrific, and the bucatini with mushrooms that have been pre-soaked in sherry before they've been sautéed. It's real good.
Well, the pictures of the food that are on the menu are absolutely incredible and a real feast for the eyes. So you've eaten there, or did you go down there as a visit to a deli?
I did both. I did a flyby on their soft opening and didn't have time. It was and then stopped after doing the cooking demonstration at the fair. A little juxtaposition, It was delightful. The two principal chefs have studied under and worked with Chef Blondin at the refectory for a number of years, so they're very well trained.
And Dustin Bradford,
who was here last time,
From the Crest.
Yeah, is the guy who is kind of overseeing these openings. They've also got the bakery, which is Café del Mundo, and they're opening a new restaurant and a new build down by Children's Hospital. So I hope they don't overexpand, but what they're doing right now is terrific.
And Miriam, staying with the kind of market theme, you recently visited Darista Cafe?
Oh, Do you know what? Close. Dorista dips. I grabbed three of the dips for a review, and they came out. I have not been to the cafe, but they came out with three dips. They're dips kind of unusual. A carrot dip, a beet dip, and a kale dip. Like for chips and for you are looking at me.
Well,
you
I was thinking it was ice
that
cream.
Coming. I was going to say you did not see that coming.
Kale ice cream.
Yeah. I did a fun product comparison. So one of my jobs is to review restaurants, and another one is to find Ohio products and interesting things that are available in town to eat. And so that was one of those projects where I tried all their dips, and they are fun. The carrot dip looks like baby food, so I was really suspect because baby food is not anything I ever want to eat again. But it's
I'm surprised.
Really tasty. I know I started out so good. But it was a really pleasant flavor. I'm almost kind of hoping it's good for me because I could eat it like a binge food, maybe with a spoon without any dippies.
It doesn't come in a cone, obviously.
No, in little Tupperware containers that you buy at like Weiland's and Lucky's and Hill's.
Okay, so it's not somewhere where you go and get this at a counter.
You're buying it at the grocery store. Yes,
and then you're dipping.
A spoon is what I ended up with, but you know, chips or vegetables if you're somebody who's into vegetables, and chips if you're someone kind of like me. So they're good and they're made locally, and just. You know, it's different from I love sour cream and onion soup dip, but you know this is different and equally pleasant.
Well, it probably is healthier
and probably healthier.
No preservatives.
Yes, and so it makes me hipper. You know, because that's all hip.
292-8513. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment this morning, we're talking with Rich Terapak, his son Rich, who both write for our blog, Chefs in the City, and Marian Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back on All Sides Weekend in just a moment. And this is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking with WOSU restaurant reviewers Rich Terapak, his son Rich, along with Marian Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground. Rich, we were talking during the break about a new concept restaurant coming to Clintonville pretty soon.
Yes, I haven't been there yet because it doesn't open until October, but I found it really interesting just because, you know, we see so many concepts being regurgitated over and over. This was one very original one, place called Acre, which the concept is farm-to-table kind of to-go fast food.
ACRE.
Yeah, ACRE. It's going into the space that in the 2700 block of North High that used to house Graffiti Burger and then for a very short time a place called Talita's. It's not the most welcoming of facades. I think it maybe used to be like a 7-Eleven or Dairy Mart that was converted when Graffiti Burger bought it. But the concept sounds really neat. There's a fellow by the name of Todd Mills who moved back here from the Bay Area after working in several organizations out there that catered to farm-to-table and local foods, joined Local Matters, which many people have heard about here in Central Ohio. And this is his concept. He started doing a pop-up in the Hills Market in Worthington. I think referred to it as the granary, but it was very popular up there and is opening up in Clintonville in October. So it'll be interesting to see how it does. The foods, you know, it's salads, curried roasted cauliflower, sweet corn cookies, Thai burritos, just using, very fresh, farm-to-table ingredients. So I wish them the best of luck. I think it's a really neat concept. I know my wife, more than me, is very into, our children eating, very healthy foods. And I think
except when they're their grandparents.
Yeah. But I think this is a great alternative for kind of, moms and dads on the go who need to pick up a quick meal but don't want to pick up KFC or something like that to bring home. Everything's supposed to be priced under $10. So it'll be neat to see how it does.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly in the right neighborhood.
Exactly.
That's what I was thinking. Now that we have Harvest, which also has an emphasis on local artisanal pizzas, and Angry Bear, which we were talking about earlier, it's right in between those two. So you can make a pit stop every 5 minutes as you drive down High Street.
Yeah. Clintonville's really, getting some good spots in there.
292-8513 if you'd like to join our conversation this morning. Miriam, another restaurant, and I had not heard about this. I don't get downtown very often, and when I do, I get lost almost instantly. A place called Oliver's.
Oh, that, yes, that was fun. And it would be easy to get lost if you were looking for Oliver's because it's on Lynn Alley.
Pearl.
I'm good at. I can find Pearl because it's parallel to High Street and just right up. So I feel good about Pearl. Lynn, I have to pray on my way that it will appear. And it does. It's always appeared when I've looked for it. But there's always that uncertainty. Well, it's not there anymore.
Yeah. It runs parallel to Broad Street, just one block north.
Okay. I was going to say, you have more Lynn experience than I have. I just have Pearl and High and Broad Street. And it does help. It always helps, I think, to be pedestrian downtown.
Yeah.
Driving is hard. Walking, you can find everything.
And parking is impossible.
If you stay on foot. Parallel parking is another long discussion. But Oliver's is interesting and noteworthy because it comes from Fab Dining. And that group, FAB, is
Yvonne's Harbor.
Yes. And she is famous for sort of over-the-top fabulousness in terms of restaurant design. So you always know you get Manifesto.
Manifesto.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you've ever been in those, you know to expect like things spray-painted bright gold and some red velvet and some houndstooth all mixed up together.
Purple chandeliers and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you never have to talk in that restaurant because you can spend all your time with your mouth open just kind of staring.
But Oliver's is different, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, okay. Have you been there too?
Yeah, I went there as well.
I was surprised. I was like, well, where is the gold gaudy stuff?
It's a great concept. And I mentioned to Yvonne it was a great concept because there's not another sports bar downtown.
Yeah.
And you know, they've got lots of TVs all over the place, a very long bar, plenty of booths, a good kind of sports bar menu, a lot of great burgers.
I have to tell you my favorite thing, and then you tell me your favorite thing, okay, which was the Fluffernutter sandwich, which was made on French toast.
Now, sports observers like Fluffernutters?
I like Fluffernutters. I'm about me. So the fact that I had never thought of putting it on French toast because, you know, peanut butter and marshmallow cream is not the most substantial thing in the world.
Yeah.
But if you put the outside in egg and fry it, then it's like, it's sturdy. So it is, yes, it is man food. And you could have that in a sports bar.
Yeah.
I love that. What did you like?
I had a Cali burger, which is a California burger. Obviously, it's going to have some avocado on it, et cetera. They're half-pound burgers.
Nice. I think it was huge.
And it was cooked perfectly. And three other guys from the office went, and each had a different thing, and they all enjoyed them. So, yeah.
Okay, so this is Lynn Alley.
Right.
Yeah.
And Lynn Alley is so short that I don't think you can do anything.
Pedestrian. You can't park on it. So, yeah.
And you can't go someplace else. It's not like you'll walk down Lynn Alley and go, where is it? If you find Lynn Alley, that's pretty much what's there.
If you know where the ringside is, just go to the corner and turn left.
There we go.
Thank you. Okay. That helps me.
Yeah.
Well, again, the pictures, especially the French fries, just look wonderful. Really, you know, brown and crisp and like you want to eat.
Yeah, no, I saw that same picture and got me craving it as well.
Molly Lyman is the photographer for CU, and so we very seldom go places together because I'm all secret, and it's hard to be secret when you have a big camera. But she always
12-inch lens.
I think probably a good 50% of the readers, and it's probably more like 70 to 80. Click on to see Molly's photos. It's not so much
no,
the words.
No, it's to read your stuff.
She does a great job as well.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's half the battle, though, is making the food look good. It's
the
first thing. That's the first sense that's engaged when you receive a meal are your eyes.
I concur.
That's right.
Indeed.
292-8513 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about food and restaurants here in Columbus. One of the other kind of new dinner event or diner events is the Historical Dinner Club, which Steve Stover, another one of our contributors, wrote about on our website, Chefs in the City. This is a dinner that remembers
a restaurant.
A restaurant.
Yeah. At restaurants from the 50s, 60s, et cetera. I think that, and some that have recently closed, I think this one, which is going to be the 12th next Tuesday. Elena does the cooking, and she models it after the food served at this time, the Claremont. So go early and order the banana cream pie.
So there were certain things on the Claremont menu that are memorable, that people loved, and those are on the historical menu.
Right, right. And they may be, you know, they may do Marzetti's, for instance, or Pale Eddie's, or any of those kinds of.
Well, the High Line, I think, was one of the
Miramore,
ones.
All of those kinds of places. It's a Columbus Historical Society. It's appropriate. It's kind of reaching back.
Well, the proceeds benefit.
And speaking of reaching back, I think the Chintz Room, which is a historical restaurant in Columbus, Ohio, in the old Lazarus Building downtown, is being reopened. Not the exact same restaurant, but the concept is being redone by Liz Lessner and is, I think, due to open soon. I think
it's going to be right on the main floor, so you don't have to go up to the fifth floor any longer.
It looks really neat. I've seen a lot of photos that have been posted on different websites, and it looks like a great place. I can't wait to try it.
It's great.
I interviewed her about this when it was first announced that she was going to be renovating that space into a restaurant. The one thing that she conceded she won't be able to match is the pricing.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think anything was over about $2, and that was a steak and potatoes and salad. It was just remarkable.
I saw a copy of the old menu. That would be nice if they could do that. Maybe a theme night around that.
But there was a chicken salad, I think, that people really loved.
Oh, the chicken salad was a big favorite.
Yeah, Dad, you worked there back in the day.
My dad got me a job the day I turned 16.
Someone was telling me about something that was like a sandwich that was covered in salad. Is that something that you...
It was covered in something. It was called the hidden sandwich, I think.
And is that what it was?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that in years. And it was just a sandwich, maybe ham and cheese. I can't remember what's in it. I'll have to think about that for a while. But it was covered with, kind of an overdressed salad, and it was good. It's all good. One of the neat things is that she announced this shortly before, maybe a month before Bob Lazarus died, who was the last manager of that facility, and he knew of it and was excited about it.
Well, of course, as busy as she is, she's got a couple of restaurants in progress on the west side. The one in Franklinton, the Dirty Franks, has already opened, I think, in Westgate. Betty's has closed in the Short North, which was, I think, her flagship restaurant.
Mm-hmm. I understand there's a new concept from the North Star Group going in there. I haven't heard too much more than that. But
they do good stuff.
They do a good job, and hopefully they can afford the rent down there.
Well, it's one of the problems in the Short North, is that the rents
I joked with someone recently, she helped build that street, and now, you end up getting priced out of it. It's certainly a lot more highbrow than it was just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
292-8513. We're talking about foods and restaurants in the Columbus and Central Ohio area. If you'd like to talk with our panel of reviewers, you can call us. 292-8513, Rich Terapak, and his son Rich both write for our blog, Chefs in the City. Miriam Bowers Abbott is here from Columbus Underground. Miriam, how do you decide when to review a restaurant? Does it have to be brand new? Do you revisit some of the older ones?
Do you know, it's a lot easier working for Columbus Underground to make that decision than it was when I was a written journalist, because when I wrote for the other paper, there was a conflict because a lot of media was hitting things fast, you would hope a reviewer would give something timely, but then there's also an obligation to wait until a restaurant has its feet underneath it and has things going in a smooth fashion. So I always felt conflicted. Like, do I go right now and be the first, or do I wait until they've got a chance? And maybe some restaurateurs, like Cameron Mitchell, I can be the first because it's an established place. And then another place where they're just getting started, I shouldn't be.
That's the reason I was waiting on Angry Bear, quite frankly.
Make sure they had their legs under.
Dad and I usually say 2 months. The one time we broke that rule was Wolf's Ridge, but thankfully they didn't occur. Incredible job, and we wrote a glowing review for them. But generally,
they got the best restaurant of the year.
Yeah, it turned out to be true. But generally, at least a couple months. And somebody else might beat you to it, but I'd rather get the experience that they want you to have rather than the experience that they just happen to have being open a week.
Yeah.
Well, it's very tough. Sometimes there are unforeseen problems. You have a staff that isn't quite fully trained, hasn't gelled, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
It's a high turnover business. I mean, people who are there in the 2 weeks in might decide they don't like it and leave.
Well, Columbus Underground has First Look, and so either Walker or Ayanna will go to someplace within the first 2 or 3 days of something opening, and it's cashed out as we are here early, and we're going to tell you what it is. And then I have all the time in the world to go visit after that. There's no reason.
And what
for
I like about
soon.
That First Look articles is it's more descriptive than opinionated. It's just kind of informing the public about what their menu items are.
It's not a review.
It's more of informational than it is a review, but it's great, especially for people like us to see, because it helps us kind of game plan what we'll do in the future.
Yeah, it's the best source of new stuff.
It is.
Are you afforded the luxury of going back two or three times, or do you pretty much have one shot?
They give me so much freedom. So I could certainly go to some place as many times as I want. The question is would I want to eat at a restaurant three times before I sat down to write it, as opposed to going to other restaurants? So I don't think I've been to places twice. I can't think of a place in recent memory that I've visited three times before I started to write about it. It's just not it wouldn't be practical.
That usually happens if you've heard great things about it or read great things, and then your first experience is awful.
Then you say it
must have been a mistake, so you go back a couple more times.
Yeah, it's so hard because I think every place is a little bit different every night of the week, right? Because the staff is going to be a little different, their chemistry is going to be different. What else is going on? If there's a crazy customer, it's going to be a different experience every night of the week. So that's always kind of a weird thing for reviewing. I went to Spaghetti Warehouse. That'll come out next week because people on the message board.
Boy, I haven't been there in 5 years.
Well, people on the message board were so frustrated. There were some people that had had some really not good experiences there. And so we thought, oh, well, Miriam's due for a weird one. Why don't we send her there? And
was it you who did Press Grill recently?
I did.
I had
a good time at Press Grill,
which is some of my favorite bar food.
I had never been to Press Grill.
Oh, really? I was like, wow, how'd they come up with Press Grill? Because I mean, I know tons of people who love it, but you know, it's been there for many years now, and I was happy to see that because they deserve a little press. They do.
I had a good time.
Their daily specials are real good.
I had a good time there. Their meatloaf is really good. Mm-hmm. And
their burgers are great. Yeah, their tacos are terrific.
Well, I think don't they have a pulled pork sandwich on Saturdays, don't they?
And a sirloin tip on Sundays.
That's the special. I think it's only 10.
And it's a tiny kitchen for, as good a job as they do. I mean, you can see the whole thing.
I know, that's what I was saying. I'm like, I think that's it. I think that's a little guy, one guy.
We've got a dishwasher in back, but that is the extent of the kitchen. They do really good food with a very limited space.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to Spaghetti Warehouse.
Oh, yes. I know, because you're like, what did she do with that? I did not hate it as much as some people. But my expectations were really low. I mean, quite honestly, when you read a whole bunch of scathing reviews, you're expecting, I expected processed chicken patties for my chicken parmesan. And it wasn't. It was real intact chicken muscle. I didn't do well with the Italian wedding soup. I don't have anything nice to say about it. But the chili was good. I mean, it just depends on what you order. The people that work there were really nice. I thought their spaghetti was good. Their tomato sauce was real tomato sauce. It wasn't like pour out of a jar of ragu, which I have had before. Mm-hmm. Their garlic bread was on bread. It wasn't on hot dog buns, which I have had that before, too. My experience was not the negative one that some people have had. So
it must have a following. It has been around for, 30 years, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it did. It didn't look empty there.
Yeah.
It's very West Side.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that it's a place where kids go before the prom or before a dance.
Ooh.
Or, it's one of those sort of starter restaurants, if you will, perhaps graduating to fine dining.
It's not an intimidating menu. No, that's right. The Florentine, has anybody been there recently?
I haven't.
That's the other West Side staple for that cuisine. Yeah.
Well, there's Tommy's Diner, and as we said, Liz Lesner is opening a draft house or something, I want to say, in the Clintonville area. There's a lot of development going on down there. The Idea Foundry just moved to East Franklinton. Of course, we have 400 East Rich, where Dining Hall was established a couple of years ago. It's a great place for food trucks to go.
Strongwater.
What is the restaurant that I love on the other side?
Because I always want to call it.
I had it in my notes. I knew it. But it looks really neat. I've yet to get over there yet, but definitely want to. It's in an old rustic kind of warehouse building, but looks like a neat place.
Yeah.
Well, and that is the part of Franklinton that's being targeted for restoration. Of course, those people have been promised so many times that that restoration is coming, that development is coming, but this time it really seems to be happening.
Yeah, getting some critical mass.
Because just pure people power started it anyway. They started it without
the
city.
Typically that's the way it goes. It's grassroots, and that's the way the Short North started.
In German Village a long time
ago. You can't manufacture something like that. It really has to come from the grassroots.
Yeah.
So. Well, I want to thank you all very much for joining us this morning. We've been talking with Rich Terapak, his son Rich, who both write for our blog and our website, wosu.org/chefsinthecity, and Miriam Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground. We will do this again next month. And Rich, just before we go, Columbus State Taste of the Future is coming up August 12th.
August 12th. It's a large food fair, more or less, and it's very good with tons of local vendors.
I'm Marilyn Smith. We'll see you again in September.